I'll try my best to answer. I'm not a guru of everything, so. Hey, Gabby. The very, very first one?
Yeah.
Oh boy. how do I do this here? I'm gonna have to do this. Which slide was it? God's what? Sorry?
God's creating activities in Genesis 1, and it was involved separating.
Oh, okay. Yep. Sure. Here we go. Okay. So, questions, comments? Yes.
I had a question in terms of like enjoying secular art. So I've wrestled with this kind of on and off for several years. There's been times when I've watched a movie or listened to a song and it's resonated so deeply, even with gospel truths, but it's coming from a clearly secular source. How should we go about engaging secular art?
Right.
And yeah.
Okay, so I'll repeat the question. How should we go about engaging with secular art? We all have encountered art that's not Christian that we've enjoyed massively, that we can appreciate the beauty in it and so on. This goes back to the image of God that we talked about in the second section, that we cannot help but image God. And even the unsaved person images God. Now, they don't do it to God's glory. They don't do it aimed rightly. So, you know, obviously secular art and even Christian art will always kind of, you know, not really hit the mark. But every now and then they will, right? And they'll produce something that is genuinely beautiful, right? Again, like the way that we process it is like we think about it like Christianly. We look at God's triune glory and what defines beauty as, you know, and then we use that as a grid. And we say, okay, what about this is true? What about this is aesthetically pleasing? What about this is powerful and purposeful, right? And you can appreciate secular art because you know that ultimately it all comes from God, that they are imaging God, even in their denial and suppression of the truth. They can't help but image God. And you as a Christian, though, can then roll that up into worship because you can say, thank you, Lord, for these common graces that people who even unsaved are able to exhibit, right? So for the difference is the secular person, the atheist, the non-Christian, that never rolls up into worship of the true God. But for the Christian, you can roll that up into worship of the true God because you realize where that source comes from. Is that helpful? Yeah. Lynn.
I feel like I've never really gotten a specific answer on that. Like when it comes to artists, like musicians, singers that are Christian, is it ever okay for them to cross over to secular music? Or what's the answer?
Right. Yeah, should a Christian artists only sing love songs to Jesus, basically, right? Or can they cross into what we call the secular field? Again, I think this comes back to the lordship of Christ. If I truly believe that Christ is Lord of all, it means really and truly there is no sacred secular divide, right? Christ is Lord and reigning now and of all, and everything good and true and beautiful comes from him, right? Can the Christian artist then create in a sphere that is not particularly Christian? Oh God, yes, please do. Because we need Christians in society, in different areas of creativity, in media, in music, in everything. Because your Christianity comes out not just in singing Jesus, 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 I love you, or making crosses, or whatever it is, right? Like your Christianity comes out in your whole life. How you live, your integrity, serving your boss, like all these things. I think part of the problem that we have is we tend to compartmentalize our Christianity into these different pockets, right? And right now we're talking about creativity, so we're compartmentalizing it into there. But what I'm hoping that you guys are seeing is that it goes way beyond just this. That's one aspect of you, but that's not all of you. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not drawing every single minute of the day, right? Like, my life has way more to it than just that, right? I'd like to. But we're whole beings, right? And you glorifying God is going to come out in a myriad of other ways too. Even if your creativity directly isn't necessarily like, you know, saying, Jesus, I love you, or he's Lord of Lords, or whatever, right? So a Christian artist, I think, can create good art or good creativity or whatever it is to the glory of God, even in secular fields. Yeah.
What do you think about the icons who represent God or Trinity or different things from heaven?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so iconography, that's a good question. It's a question that I think evangelicals still struggle with hugely. The Protestants and in the Reformation struggled with that a lot. You know, there's a serious issue of idolatry where we make icons, idols, whatever you want to call it, that represent God, and they end up directing worship at it, and that's wrong worship. Why is it wrong, though? So, first and second commandments. First commandment is love God only. So it's about who to worship. Second commandment is how to worship, right? It says, don't make any graven images or whatever. Don't make any representation of God and then worship that, right? So it's replacing God. Remember we talked earlier, I think I had some sort of quip or whatever there, where our idolatry is when we mix up reflecting God to replacing God. That's the distinction. So how do you know something has become idolatrous in terms of a creative thing, whether it be a sculpture or painting or whatever, is when it starts replacing the true God. When it becomes the end target of worship, that is idolatry, right? Now, I think within the second commandment, you have certain boundaries that a Christian creative should operate within, because we know the proclivity of the sinful heart to want to worship things rather than the true God, that you may want to avoid, let's say, paintings that would inspire people to put their worship on the thing rather than go worshiping through it to the real true God, right? So this is why, for example, Protestants have usually avoided any representation of Jesus or of God the Father or whatever, like in realistic and imaging forms, you know what I mean? Like, so a lot of Protestant art ended up being kind of symbolic. And that was to try to guard against people ending their target of their worship on the art itself. Because when you see it as a symbol or as like some sort of abstract kind of thing, or even an icon, like I did these graphic icons for the thing, like these, right? Like I'm doubtful anyone's gonna worship that, right? But again, it's kind of like the ethos behind it. The heart behind it is that I don't want to create an idol, so I'm gonna try to avoid doing that. Now, I said a lot of words there. I think the logical question usually is, well, what about Sunday school? And we have like comics of Jesus and like drawings of, you know, whatever, right? I think there is part of that, there's a right impetus to be a little bit wary about how we represent God and how we teach children through that, especially. If we're clear in our teaching saying, hey, this is a representation, this is a cartoon, this is not how he actually looks, right? Those are good ways to guard them from, you know, ending up in idolatry.
But what about looking only to the art, mm-hmm. Icons? Like, for example, Michelangelo, the 16th chapter, or other great painters?
Yeah.
Just to the art without worshiping?
Not quite understanding your question. Can you rephrase it a different way?
Yes, look into a painting, icons, like, don't think too that you go to worship, you fall in this scene.
Okay, so like somebody going to maybe see the Sistine Chapel and they never think about how it connects with God or the word, to like roll that appreciation off the art up to worship the God. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yes.
Okay. Like, how do we navigate that? Again, I think it's, you know, having a really well-rounded theology. So, I mean, I've gone to lots of Catholic basilicas and cathedrals and so on, and I can recognize what is the idolatry, what is the distortion of the gospel. For example, like, I know that the Catholic Mass, like, is a representation of Jesus' sacrifice, and that's wrong because his sacrifice is once for all. It's not supposed to be represented. That's the whole point of it. So I understand and recognize the idolatry, right? But then I can also look at the architecture and look at what was true behind it. For example, the Gothic, vertical lines that point you upward, or the cross shape that, you know, tells you that you can only worship through the cross or in the cross, right? I can appreciate those aspects of truth and say that is reflecting something true of God and worship God for that. So all that to say is, like, you use the same grid that we use with everything else to filter it and say, hey, this is adulthood and this is true and good, and I glorify God because that comes from Him. Right? Is that helpful? Yeah. And only a Christian who's really been thinking through these things theologically can really process that. And this is why it's important for creatives, and not just only creatives, people who appreciate creativity, to have a good understanding theologically. About creativity. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much, Thaddeus, just for engaging the arts. Like, this is so great to see a church doing a workshop like this. Just the content is excellent. My question is kind of related. You know, in art history, a very popular image is crucifixion scenes, yes, of Jesus. And these paintings were not created to be kind of pleasing to the eye or give you kind of a warm and fuzzy sensory experience, but to kind of show ugliness, honestly. Yes. So I'm wondering if you see a biblical foundation or justification for Christian artists depicting ugliness or the darkness, if it serves a redemptive purpose.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. I'm hoping someone is going to ask that question, because the point that I kind of cut out. So Christian artists should keep the big picture in mind, I think. So part of telling what's true is also telling the major and minor themes. So you're not telling something true. Okay, give you a good example. Why do we find corny, you know, Christian movies just way too cheesy and just they're not really excellent? It's because they're idealized and they don't tell the truth about reality as it is. Part of that reality is the stain of sin that we live with, right? Of evil, of suffering, of death, of these things. And it's not that we major on that minor note. Think of it like a, you know, like a song, right? You need the minor chords because they make the major chords resonate, right? And I think Christian art will be like that, where you can be honest and true and authentic as a Christian and deal really and truly with the realities of suffering and evil in this broken world. But you're not going to dwell there like, you know, some, what is it, type of art? It's slipping my mind right now, but kind of like there's a postmodern form of art that basically only deals with just like really downer kind of themes, right? It's just very drab and hopeless. You won't stay there because you realize the major theme of redemption, right? So it's okay, I think, for a Christian to deal with evil and suffering, really. But again, they're going to put it in the big picture. Also, I think it's important to remember, when we try to look at an artist, it's unfair to judge an artist by one piece only. All art and creativity happens in context. You should be looking at the body of work, because perhaps that's the minor note that the artist was portraying. And you look at the full body to get what that means in the context of it. That's what art critics should be doing. And that's how we should also be looking at Christian art, or art as Christians. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the crucifixion itself, I realize this is a Christian liberty kind of thing. I'm very uncomfortable with depiction, like especially realistic depictions of Jesus, just because I feel like there's a tendency for people to fixate on the features and like, oh, look, he's a white guy with blonde hair, blue eyes, or whatever it is. Or it just doesn't ever capture all of who God is and who Jesus is and so on. So there's, yeah, I struggle with that one, honestly, personally, in terms of depictions of any person of the Trinity, really. Because a depiction or icon or image never really does it justice. Yeah. I'm not really sure where I land on that, is what I'm saying. I do know that there is a danger of idolatry, but at the same time, too, I do appreciate that, you know, there might be some goodness to this, too. It's kind of one of those tensions I live in. I'll let you know when I resolve it. Any other questions, comments? Okay.
it's like forming in my head, so it might not come out the best way.
Okay.
So you know how like in culture we've made certain artists or creatives into idols, but it's also very important, I guess, to look at the person's life as well as looking at their art. Mm-hmm. What would you say a good balance of that is, or like a realistic way of being able to see their personality and character?
That is a big question. Think about how to formulate an answer. So, okay, give you guys a good example. I actually cut this from the script too. So, you guys know this, the hymn "It Is Well,"
mm-hmm.
Horatio Spafford. Right? You know the story behind it that you know, his wife and kids were on the way over the Atlantic. They were lost at sea. The wife only survived, sends him a message. She alone made it. He goes across the sea, and at the point in the ocean where their ship went down, he writes this hymn, "It Is Well," when peace like a river attended my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, right? And it's a gorgeous, amazing hymn. I love this hymn. But you read the guy's life, and he was a raving, crazy guy, like just way off the wall, like, you know, believing in continued revelations, and like just... like he was a heretic, he really was. Like, and I'm not using that word lightly. Like, he started to deny hell, he denied that anybody went to hell, he denied even that the devil went to hell. Like, he was, I'm not lying, a heretic. But I love that hymn, right? How do we process that? Now, I think it's very analogous to the way that we process good art that's created from non-saved people, from non-Christian, right? You can weigh, I think, the art itself on its own merits because we have this grid by which we can process it, you know, the trifold glory of God that we look at. That's the true standard of beauty. And you look at it on a per piece basis, you know, and say, hey, this guy's life is a mess, but this piece that he created reflects something true of the glory of God. And that is a common grace, right? That's... When I say a grace is this, it's merit that's undeserved. This guy's life did not deserve to produce something of such glory and beauty, but it's grace, right? I think you can kind of do the same thing. And again, that doesn't mean that you accept the guy's way of life or the other's way of life, right?
I think we are made to worship God. And when we come to Christ, we, by ourselves, inspired by God, we choose how to worship God.
Mm-hmm.
Before, we worship God in an unhappy way, and the expression of our worship means a form of art that is, today we don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is easy to understand when you want to sing a song that doesn't worship God.
Mm-hmm.
The Spirit of God enlightens you to stop there and to search for something else.
Yeah.
Because He made us to worship
God. Yeah, and many Christians experience that. You know, maybe you get saved out of, I'm going to really make a generalized kind of statement. Like, let's say you get saved out of, like, heavy satanic rock, you know, metal kind of music or whatever, right? And you get saved, and this word convicts you now that is probably not something good to listen to. Now, is the form and style of it necessarily wrong? Like, is rock music wrong? Like, is a 4-4 beat with, like, heavy, like, electric guitars and distortion, is that wrong? No, not in itself. The content is wrong. So, you see, what I've done there, I just took that glory triad, that objective standard of beauty, and applied it to that thing. And that's what a Christian will do. And that's actually what happens when the Spirit starts to convict us. He convicts us of truth, right? And sometimes that happens to Christians when they're saved, and they don't even know what's really happening. I just gave you language now to, like, give words to it. This will be our last question, because I want to make sure we finish decent time.
Right. Well, I would echo the statements that you heard. This has been a great introduction to having a degree of creativity and good gospel thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So my question, maybe this is a good one to end on, is now that we've gone through this, how would you have us help process it as a next step? Things to be thinking about, resources, books,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so
to go to, something like that to continue the exploration.
Yeah, absolutely. So two things. If you return to the last page on your handout, you'll see that there's three recommended reading. Right? Now, in prep for this class, I read a lot of stuff. Some was really good, some was just and then some was really, really good. And some was really, really bad. Anyways, I've kind of curated this list for you guys, so you don't have to go through that struggle. These are my top three. Right? So definitely the top one that I recommend is Images and Idols. A lot of content actually from today is taken or inspired from that book. It really helped me refine that idea of the image of God and how it relates to creativity. And it's a short read. It's a great read. It's well designed too. So you creatives would love it. So get that book. It's a really good book. Second one, Art for God's Sake, is a really nice small book. So if you don't like to read, it's literally like that tiny. But it's a good like starter. It'll kind of go over some of the things that we touched on, right? The last one is a little bit more of an in-depth read. If you're really hungering to dive deeper into this, that's a good one to like chew on. The guy was doing his PhD at Westminster, and he's a musician, decided to go do a PhD in theology, and this was his thesis. So it's a well thought out and thorough piece of work. It'll take you a little bit to read, but it's really well done. I enjoyed it a lot. I'll point you to those three. Next thing, my lovely wife has created a sign-up sheet for us. And you know that little video that I showed? That's from this conference called Canvas. It's actually happening at the end of this month. Now, it's out in California, or Portland. I don't know, where is it?
California?
Yeah, it's in California. So we're all... No, okay. We're not flying to California, but I've gotten approval by the elders to purchase the digital license for it. Okay? So, because you guys showed up, you guys got the option now to come to the screening of it. Okay? So my wife's gonna have the sign up sheet for it. Yes. So that's my lovely wife there, Kylie. And let me look for the date. Okay. So the date will be tentatively the 28th of September. Oh wait. Nope, wrong date. Sorry. Scratch that. The 18th and 19th of October, potentially. So one of those 2 days. Okay? So that's a Friday or a Saturday. I already contacted the organizers. They said that the material isn't going to be available for a couple weeks after the conference because they need to edit it and all that. That's why I put it off so far, just to be safe, you know, that by the time that date we'll have the content. But if you're interested in learning more about creativity and faith, it's a great conference. I've benefited a lot from their videos and stuff before. If you're interested, sign up there and we'll add you to our mailing list and we'll let you know the confirmed dates and times. Okay? So the Canvas conference, that's your next step. If you want to learn more, keep on growing in this area, that'll be the next step, the event. Other than that, check out the resources.
One last quick thing. I know this is the first time you delivered this. Are you looking for feedback and how will we give it to you?
Yeah, email me. That'd be helpful. All right, cool. Thank you so much.